Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. A White House in turmoil, and in the eye of the storm is Chief of Staff John Kelly. Last week, Kelly defended Rob Porter, a former top aide, after allegations of spousal abuse surfaced by Porter's two ex-wives. Before that, the four-star general reportedly derailed a bipartisan immigration deal and called some dreamers lazy. This hour on Point, a White House in chaos and John Kelly's future. You can join us on air or online. Is it time for General Kelly to go? In spite of it all, does the president need him? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me at first this hour from Washington is Philip Rucker, White House bureau chief for The Washington Post. You can link to his story headlined, "Very Turbulent, Trump and White House Consumed with Turmoil Amid Abuse Allegations," at our website, onpointradio.org. Phil, welcome back to On Point. Always great to have you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So what's the latest from the White House today?
Well, the White House is now entering its second week of what I would describe as turmoil and chaos surrounding the departure of Staff Secretary Rob Porter. We saw a number of senior administration officials out on the Sunday shows yesterday on television, and they're still struggling to get their stories straight. We've heard conflicting accounts of what Chief of Staff John Kelly knew about the domestic violence allegations against Rob Porter and when and what he did about it, if anything, and when the president found out. And so I think there's going to be mounting pressure here for this White House to be more transparent with its internal decisions so that the public can sort of understand how they deal with something like this, which is not only a character issue, as you know, but also a national security threat.
So here is the president. When asked on Friday to comment on the resignation of White House aide Rob Porter, President Trump emphasized Porter's strong work ethic and said that he wishes him well in his future endeavors.
As you probably know, he says he's innocent. And I think you have to remember that. He said very strongly yesterday that he's innocent. So you'll have to talk to him about that. But we absolutely wish him well. Did a very good job while he was at the White House.
So, Philip Rucker, White House counsel Don McGahn knew last year that two former wives of Rob Porter were preparing to testify to the FBI about spousal abuse. So why is this an issue now?
Yeah, and our reporting actually shows that McGahn, the White House counsel, was told at four separate occasions last year, beginning in January of 2017, that these allegations could be a problem for Porter. His security clearance was delayed by the FBI interminably. Because of these issues, because his ex-wives had told the FBI about the abuse that they encountered at the hands of Rob Porter, the White House covered it up. They just didn't act on it. McGahn knew this information. Kelly reportedly knew this information, and they chose not to take action. I think in part because Rob Porter was seen as such an integral part of the White House operation. He was one of the few professionals there with government experience. He was Kelly's sort of eyes and ears and effectively his deputy in trying to instill order and manage the access of information to the president. And so Kelly viewed him as integral and didn't want to create a problem.
So first, reportedly, Kelly stood by Porter and urged him not to resign and then walked that back.
That's
a
correct.
Bit. Take us through the timeline briefly of the statements released by John Kelly.
Yeah. So Tuesday night of last week is when the Daily Mail first reported these allegations, on-the-record allegations from Porter's ex-wives in the story. Kelly read the story and decided to put out a statement standing by Porter, and not just standing by him, but calling him a man of true integrity and honor. And Kelly went on to say that he can't say enough good things about Rob Porter as a professional, but also as an individual. He's not the only one who stood by Porter. Sarah Sanders, the White House press secretary, issued a similar statement, as did Senator Orrin Hatch, who was Porter's boss before Porter came to the White House. The next day, Wednesday, surfaced that photo of Porter's ex-wife with a black eye. That became really visual, horrible evidence of the abuse. And Kelly, according to our reporting, internally continued to stand by Porter, encouraged him to keep his job. There was a feeling inside the White House that Porter would be able to fight these allegations, just as President Trump had fought those many allegations of sexual assault against him during the campaign. And Porter was going to hang on, but then by Wednesday afternoon, it became clear he could not. And so he resigned, and the White House press secretary, Sarah Sanders, announced the resignation. It was that evening, Wednesday night, when Kelly issued his first statement actually condemning domestic violence.
We should say Rob Porter has denied these allegations. And here
That's correct. Multiple
White House senior staffers appearing on Sunday talk shows yesterday to express the president's confidence in his chief of staff, John Kelly. Here's NBC. This was a montage of their statements. Here's Kellyanne Conway first, the director of legislative affairs, Mark Short, after that, and budget director Mick Mulvaney.
He says that General Kelly is doing a great job and that he has full faith in him.
He has absolute confidence in General Kelly.
I think that talk about the chief's departure is much ado about nothing.
Phil Rucker, you've reported that Trump and John Kelly have had a series of conversations that White House officials describe as very turbulent. Tell us about these exchanges in this context.
That's correct. You know, I don't know that Kelly's going to be heading towards the exits right away, but the president is not pleased, in large part because this has been a negative story of a scandal created by his staff. And the president doesn't like that bad PR. He doesn't like the fact that Kelly and his other aides have botched the public relations effort here. And the president, according to my reporting and also the reporting of other outlets, has over the last several days been sounding out his advisors and friends about who might replace Kelly as the chief of staff. He's had his eyes on Mick Mulvaney, the budget director, on Kevin McCarthy, the number two House Republican in the Congress. That doesn't mean that Kelly's going to be fired anytime soon, but it certainly means that Trump is not happy and is exploring his options, at least casually, at this point. And we can also report that Kelly had informally told the president he would be willing to resign if that would help resolve the matter. That doesn't mean he submitted a formal resignation offer, but he signaled that he would be willing to do so if it's what the president wanted.
Is John Kelly a liability to the president or an asset to the president at this point, or both, Phil Rucker?
At this point, he's probably both. You know, he can be an asset insofar as there are some areas where he's brought some order to the process inside the White House. You know, he's a smart man with military background. But at this moment right now, he's a serious liability. I mean, his credibility is at risk. I don't think the public trusts him. Many of his senior staff that work under him at the White House no longer trust him because, as we reported last Friday in a staff meeting, Kelly told a conflicting version of events and asked his subordinates to lie on his behalf in presenting an inaccurate portrait of Kelly's decision making with regard to Rob Porter. So he's got a lot of cleanup to do to restore his reputation and get back on firmer footing.
Phil Rucker, White House bureau chief for The Washington Post. Great to have you, Phil. Thanks for the information.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Joining me now from New York City is Gabriel Sherman, special correspondent for Vanity Fair. You can link to his story headlined Beyond Belief, John Kelly's Defense of Rob Porter Royals, The West Wing, at our website onpointradio.org. Gabe, always great to have you. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So it's not just the Porter incident. John Kelly and President Trump have had their difficulties for months now. Tell us about some other points of contention between these two men.
Yeah, really, the Porter scandal should be seen in the larger context of a relationship that has been going south, you know, pretty much from the moment John Kelly became chief of staff last summer. You know, these are two very different men. John Kelly, of course, is a four-star Marine general, rose up through the ranks of probably the most conservative of the service branches, and he prizes order and discipline. And Donald Trump's White House is famous for its freewheeling and chaotic style. And so the president, as I've reported and others have reported, has really been chafing at Kelly's efforts to rein in Trump's sort of operating style of seeking out all these disparate points of view, having people flow in and out of the Oval Office, having outside friends and advisors call the White House. Kelly has largely cut off those contacts. And that's why Rob Porter, again, was so integral to the operation, because Rob Porter's job was to physically restrain and control the information that was making its way to the president's desk. And as I reported, you know, Trump in recent days and weeks has grown increasingly frustrated with Kelly and sees him as someone who thinks that he is actually running the West Wing. And he told an advisor outside the White House that he, quote, has another nut job thinking he's running things. And really, part of the things your listeners can understand is that John Kelly is running into some of the same problems that befell Steve Bannon when he was forced out of the White House last year, because Donald Trump chafed at the image that Steve Bannon was somehow the quiet power behind the presidency.
In fact, he's been very much in the headlines. You know, there were several incidents. Kelly saying that Donald Trump isn't fully informed about the wall, that his positions have evolved. Kelly's remarks on the Dreamers saying they're too lazy, got to get off the couch, all of that. Kelly apparently derailing the Lindsey Graham, Dick Durbin bipartisan immigration deal. He's been very much in the headlines, Gabe Sherman.
Yes, without question. And, you know, partly this is, you know, making the president very frustrated that, you know, John Kelly thinks that he, in, you know, in, specifically in regards to immigration, is, you know, really running the show. And we should point out the comments, especially around the wall, in which Kelly told lawmakers on Capitol Hill that the president wasn't, quote, fully informed. You know, this is really revealing of a relationship. These two men are not close. As I mentioned earlier, they couldn't be more different. And John Kelly has said privately to people that he does not serve the president. He serves the country. John Kelly has also told people he's there out of a sense of duty, not loyalty to the president. And so these comments reflect a man who does not, on a sort of a certain level, have a lot of, you know, respect for the president. He's there because he's a patriotic American. And Donald Trump, as we know, blows up and gets extremely frustrated if he's perceived not to be respected by his staff.
So how, briefly, how is this incident and beyond, how has it all impacted White House operations? I mean, John Kelly was brought in to sort of rein in a lot of what was going on, but in reality, what is it like?
Yeah, as you know, as Phil Rucker mentioned earlier, and others have reported, it's this last 2 weeks especially has been incredibly chaotic. And there's a sort of certain tragic irony into the fact that John Kelly was brought in to address the chaos and create stability, and in fact, he's ended up creating more chaos.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
You've probably heard about this Russia investigation by Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Every day there's a new headline about it. Well, Embedded is back with two episodes that lay the whole thing out, start to finish, so the news makes sense. Listen on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about the controversy surrounding Chief of Staff John Kelly and the chaos in the West Wing, and you can join the conversation. What do you make of John Kelly's comments about Dreamers, calling them lazy? Rumors he torpedoed a bipartisan immigration deal. Louisiana Republican Senator John Kennedy told CNN on Thursday that Rob Porter's alleged domestic abuse is unconscionable, but then stood up for White House Chief of Staff John Kelly.
General Kelly has done an extraordinary job as chief of staff to President Trump. I think he's a good man, and sometimes good people make bad decisions. Doesn't mean they're bad people. It means they're human.
And here's Montana Republican Senator John Tester strongly criticizing the White House for covering up abuse allegations, but then telling CNN's Chris Cuomo if Chief of Staff John Kelly was in on it, he needs to go.
If John Kelly's covering this up, he needs to be held accountable. No ifs, ands, or buts about it.
What would that mean, holding him accountable?
Well, I mean, holding him accountable means that he has to justify what he did, why he did it, and he better have a really good reason. Otherwise, he's gone too.
With me, Gabe Sherman, Vanity Fair, special correspondent from New York City. Gabe, respond to what you hear from lawmakers there. What's happening up on Capitol Hill?
Yeah, you know, I think it's revealing the fact that you even see Republicans pushing back on this White House. And, you know, this really is a big, major scandal. You know, we sometimes get inured and numbed to the scandals coming out of the Trump White House. But this in particular is particularly explosive because, Rob Porter handled the country's most sensitive national security secrets as staff secretary. And as his ex-wives testified to the FBI in his background check, they believed he was at risk of being blackmailed because of these abuse allegations and the potential for them to come out. And the fact that John Kelly knew this for months and knew that his security clearance was being held up and didn't take action, and in fact, as I've reported, did not fully brief the president until it appeared that the story was going to become public, to me is a grave sort of a sign of grave misjudgment, and that the idea that this information was covered up. And as I've also reported, it wasn't until Ivanka Trump, Donald Trump's daughter, walked into the Oval Office and showed the president a printout of the Daily Mail article in which one of Porter's ex-wives has a black eye, that the president really realized the scope of this abuse and scandal. And so while the president has defended Porter publicly, in private, he has been fuming.
Scott on Facebook says, no, these are allegations. Where is the due process here? Gabe Sherman, President Trump essentially said the same thing.
Without question. You know, no one, I think, is advocating for any sort of not for due process. But I think the issue is that this was materially important to the FBI, the people in charge of investigating the backgrounds of the people we entrust to hold the country's most delicate, sensitive national security secrets. And so the fact that the FBI felt that Rob Porter, the allegations were credible enough, and we have public records, we have a police report and a restraining order filed by one of his ex-wives, in addition to this photograph, I think, you know, obviously these allegations should be played out, but I don't think they should be played out while Rob Porter was in charge of managing our national security information.
Let me bring another voice now into the conversation from Washington. Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Susan, welcome back to On Point. Nice to have you.
Hey, Jane. Great to be with you.
So a lot of talk about the White House, their stance on women. Talk about the optics of all this for this White House.
Well, I think it's clear that the Chief of Staff, General Kelly, did not have good political instincts when it comes to the importance of the issue of violence against women. He did not take it seriously enough. Now, you'd think he would have because it was preventing the man who became his most crucial deputy from getting permanent security clearance. That is a big red flag. He had worked there for a year and not gotten that clearance the entire time that that General Kelly was the chief of staff. So there's that substantive part of it. There's also just the political one. This Me Too movement has taken on an enormous velocity in Hollywood, in business, in the news media, and in politics. And this has put the White House in really quite a difficult position.
So tell us about President Trump's tweets this weekend where he said, quote, people's lives are being shattered and destroyed by mere allegations. How do you view those texts in the context of the Me Too movement and this story?
You know, I can understand the question about due process, about the fact that there are times unfair or inaccurate accusations made against people, they should have an opportunity to defend themselves. But what was distressing, I think, to even some of the president's allies was that he was expressing concern about the men accused of abuse and not expressing concern about the women who said they were victimized by them. So that was the, it was as though he only had to kind of half the story there in terms of expressing concern. And of course, for the president, it's not a question of a legal standard of how can you convict a guy. It's a different standard. We have high standards, or historically have had high standards, for the people who serve in these very crucial and important and powerful jobs in the White House. And this would have traditionally been the kind of accusation that would have prevented someone from serving there.
Here is Senator Jeff Flake, a Republican from Arizona and a frequent Trump critic, this weekend on NBC's Meet the Press, saying that the president's response to the Porter scandal and, moreover, his refusal to believe women accusing him or those close to him of assault could impact how Republicans are viewed in this next election.
I do think if you put on a political hat, that is a big problem. Certainly how we are viewed as Republicans in the next election. I think that that is a big problem. And certainly, substantively, it's a big problem not to show any concern or empathy for the potential victims of these incidents. That is a problem. And that's something I think the president ought to correct.
Susan Page, what does this mean for the Republican Party beyond the White House?
Well, I think some Republicans see the most crucial erosion they've seen in the American electorate is among women voters, and especially better educated women voters, who have become a big swing group in American politics. I mean, a lot of suburban women voters with a college education have been voting Republican, but this has really been put to a test with Trump's candidacy last time and with his presidency since then, and that has the potential to create huge problems for Republicans in the midterm elections. And I'll tell you one other thing that I think has caused some concern among women voters generally, not just Democrats. One is the idea that you don't believe the women who are making accusations of abuse. That's been part of a longstanding national debate. The other is the idea that you need a picture, you need a photograph to be believed, because it is clear that the appearance of this, the release of this photograph that showed one of Mr. Porter's ex-wives with a black eye was what turned the debate about what to do inside the White House.
Gabe Sherman, how do you see this for the Republican Party beyond the White House?
Well, clearly, it's a liability. We saw, in the Alabama election when there was allegations against Roy Moore, Republicans in suburban Birmingham either didn't turn out or voted for Democrat Doug Jones. And so Donald Trump is really a lightning rod. And since the Access Hollywood tape in the 2016 election and the dozens of credible allegations of sexual assault and harassment that have been leveled against the president have come to light, you know, this really has been kind of the Maginot line for Donald Trump. You know, part of the reason he reflexively defends people like Rob Porter or Roy Moore is the belief in which if he sort of gives credibility to these allegations, it will then open up the door to all of his allegations being re-aired in public and re-questioned. And so this is almost kind of an existential strategic position he has taken not to open himself up to further scrutiny on the women's issue.
Gabe Sherman, Susan Page, hold on for a moment. Let me bring now from New York City, Chris Whipple, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Gatekeepers, How the White House Chiefs of Staff Define Every Presidency. Chris, thanks for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Good to be here.
So you've interviewed all living chiefs of staff since 1969 for your book. Tell me what you make of the John Kelly situation.
Well, you remember that Kelly famously said that he was not put on this earth to manage the president, but he was going to manage the West Wing, and he was going to streamline the flow of information to the president. And now it's clear that the trains have just run off the rails in the West Wing. So he's failing even by his own very narrow definition of the job. And quite frankly, the job is so much more than that. And I would say that he's really failed at almost every level. You know, the White House chief of staff has to be the person, as James A. Baker III or Leon Panetta would be the first to tell you. He has to be the person who can walk into the Oval Office, close the door, and tell the president what he does not want to hear. Kelly's failed that test time and time again, and in other ways as well.
Well, clearly Donald Trump is a man who will not be controlled. John Kelly said he was going to let Trump be Trump. I mean, clearly this is a tough job, so I wonder, are the expectations for this chief of staff different simply because of the nature of this very unconventional president?
Well, yes. You know, I mean, back in December of 2016, 10 former White House chiefs of staff went to the White House at the invitation of the outgoing chief, Dennis McDonough, and they went to give advice to Reince Priebus. But virtually every one of them knew, and by the way, they all told Priebus that he had to make sure that he was empowered as first among equals, something that never happened. But they all came, you know, virtually every one of them came away thinking this is mission impossible. You know, Godspeed. We wish him luck. But this is a very tall order. We all know Donald Trump is who he is. He won't be managed. And yet I would say that he's not the first president to come into office full of hubris, thinking that he was the smartest guy in the room. You know, other presidents get over it. other presidents learn that there's a big difference between campaigning and governing. Trump has not learned that. He's good at one thing and one thing only. That's dividing, demonizing, and disrupting. It's the chief of staff's job to show him how to govern.
And that's, I guess, the definition of a good chief of staff, that and giving the president news he doesn't want to hear. Is that how a chief of staff is most effective?
Well, you know, it's an unbelievably difficult skill set. You have to be not only first of all, you're famously the gatekeeper, creating time and space for the president to think. You're the person who tells him hard truths. You have to be the person who executes his agenda on Capitol Hill. You know, Kelly's been completely politically inept. You know, he doubles down on all of Trump's worst instincts. He's not been a guy who's helped him to govern. And, you know, I got to say, I used to say that Don Regan, Ronald Reagan's second White House chief of staff, had a lock on the title worst chief of staff in modern history. I think John Kelly's given him a run for the title. You know, Don Regan was famously arrogant and imperial, and he was oblivious. It's no coincidence that the Iran-Contra scandal happened on his watch. Nancy Reagan famously said that he loved the chief part of the title, but not the staff part so much. Mm-hmm. John Kelly reminds me of Don Regan. You know, he's really been inept in that way.
Let's get some calls in here. Up to Maine, Terry is on the line. Hi, Terry. Welcome to the program.
Yes, hello. My comment is that John Kelly has said that he is serving the country, not the president. And I worry that he is pursuing his own policy goals and he is not an elected official. And it just reflects the corrupt ethics that's like the Wild West. And it's just totally inappropriate. He's not an elected official. I don't like, you know, Trump's policy goals either, but he's not really even doing his proper job if he's.
Terry, thank you. Susan, Paige, jump in here. I mean, there was the incident of derailing the bipartisan immigration deal. Some say there were others. Is John Kelly pursuing his own sort of agenda rather than the president's?
You know, when John Kelly was named chief of staff, I think we thought of him as a reasonably apolitical figure. He'd served in the military. That wasn't a job that required him to take a lot of public positions on general policy issues. And I think one thing that has surprised many of us is that it turns out he does have policy views, and they're pretty much aligned with Donald Trump. The hard line on immigration, for instance, is one thing in which he's, I think, pretty much in concert with the president. I actually think the most serious criticisms of General Kelly is not that he's pursuing his own policy agenda, but that he has turned out to not have a good sense of Congress, that he doesn't have a good sense of politics. And it has been impossible for him to rein in some of President Trump's instincts that have caused him the most trouble, like his reliance on Twitter to communicate his every passing thought. Maybe it's not fair to blame General Kelly for that, because who knows if anyone could have succeeded on that where he has failed. But those, I think, are the more serious criticisms of how he's operated in the job.
Terry, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Marie in Albert Lea, Minnesota. Marie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. There's only one thing I can say. It's hard to keep up with what President Trump wants to do. He always is flip-flopping. First he wants one thing, and then he wants another thing. Now, with this thing with John Kelly, I believe he should definitely stay on. I believe he's in a very difficult situation just dealing with President Trump, because President Trump, he's not a politician. It's very obvious to me.
Marie, thank you. Got it coming up on the break here. Chris Whipple, a lot of drama in this White House. There's no question about that. Is it the chief of staff's job to kind of tamp down on this president?
You know, whether he likes it or not, it is his job to do that. You know, as I say, he defined the job very differently. He said he was only going to make the trains run on time in the West Wing and manage the information flow. But the job is so much more than that. You know, Josh Bolton, who was George W. Bush's pretty effective second White House chief of staff, would tell you that, you don't, as chief of staff, substitute your judgment for the president's. president is in charge. It's his agenda that you're supposed to be carrying out. But when the president acts against his best interest and jeopardizes his agenda, it's your job to step in and tell him.
What does it take to start something from nothing? And what does it take to actually build it? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on How I Built This, I speak with founders behind some of the most inspiring companies in the world. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about Chief of Staff General John Kelly under fire again, this time for his handling of the domestic violence allegations against his former top aide. You can join the conversation. Does John Kelly still have the credibility he needs to do his job? Is he doing the best he can? A tough job with an unconventional president. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. We're at On Point Radio. Yesterday on ABC's This Week, Democratic Representative Sean Maloney said it's clear John Kelly is not effective as chief of staff after the way he handled Rob Porter's security clearance and the accusations against him.
He chose not to deal with it, and that is not competent. We brought this guy in, a lot of us thought, to put some order in the White House. We thought Kelly was the guy who could manage the place, but if you're going to clean up aisle 8, you can't be throwing around jars of tomato sauce. I mean, you cannot make a bigger mess than you're cleaning up.
Great panel this hour. Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, Gabe Sherman, Special Correspondent for Vanity Fair, and Chris Whipple, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Gatekeepers, How the White House Chiefs of Staff Define Every Presidency. A lot of callers here. Let me get one in. Jim in Spencer, Iowa. Hi, Jim. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Yeah, I think Kelly's really like a fish out of water. I know he's a great leader, but he's used to a totally different rule book, and for him to call dreamers lazy, these are not new recruits. You know, these people were limited by the Dream Act. You know, Obama signed papers, you know, making it possible for them to become citizens. It wasn't automatic, and now Obama's canceled that. There's nothing they can do about it.
Jim, thanks. I'll play the sound that you're referring to. Here's White House Chief of Staff John Kelly speaking about President Trump's current immigration proposal, which would offer a path to citizenship for about 1.8 million undocumented immigrants eligible for DACA. Currently, about 690,000 are covered by the program that President Trump terminated in the fall.
The difference between 690 and 1.8 million were the people that some would say were too afraid to sign up, others would say were too lazy to get off their asses, but they didn't sign up. So the president shockingly said, okay, 1.8 million, and then probably the biggest shock was in a path to citizenship.
Gabe Sherman, did the chief of staff, John Kelly, cross the line there with those comments?
I think the fact that we're talking about it today is clearly yes. You know, his political sense for someone who rose to be a four-star Marine general clearly is completely out of his depth in Washington as in a political position. I mean, even if that is his private thoughts, and we know, as Susan mentioned, John Kelly is pretty hardline right-wing when it comes to immigration, you don't say those things because it plays into such obvious, you know, racial and ethnic stereotypes. So it does not help you politically, even if that's your aim, is to, you know, limit immigration. You shouldn't say that. And so I think, you know, this is once again how, you know, in many ways he's kind of in the wrong job. Part of Donald Trump's problem, though, is even if he wants to remove John Kelly, there's not an obvious replacement. And the Republican close to the White House and Trump advisors I speak to say that even as he's mused privately about possible replacements, there's not an obvious choice, whether it's Mick Mulvaney, or others. Tom Barrack is Trump's friend. He's reached out to. He's apparently declined the job. So that might be John Kelly's best job security, is the fact that there's not someone waiting in the wings to step in.
Chris Whipple,
I was going to ask
you, in John Kelly's defense, Chris Whipple, I mean, isn't a chief of staff meant to get into political back and forth? How can you avoid it?
Well, here's the thing. One of the most important responsibilities of the White House chief of staff, among all the others we've talked about, is to be the so-called honest broker of information. When Dick Cheney was Gerald Ford's 34-year-old White House chief of staff, and a very effective one, by the way, one of the best, Cheney's views were described as somewhere to the right of Genghis Khan. And yet, if you were in a room with Dick Cheney and you were discussing an issue, you never would have known it. He was the honest broker. Mm-hmm. He was the guy who teed up the information on every side. He never put his hand on the scale. He never tried to push his own agenda. That's a critical thing for the White House chief of staff, and Kelly's failed that test, obviously, among many others.
Mm. A lot of listeners here writing in about this from our website. Kelly was placed in an impossible position. His reputation has been badly damaged. Neil says John Kelly should go. Karen says John Kelly for sure needs to be fired. Hope Hicks needs to be fired, too. Susan Page, a lot of listeners asking about Hope Hicks and what does it mean that she is still in the White House and that this president has defended her?
Well, she is very close to President Trump. She was an aide to him before he was a candidate for president. And she has been, in some ways, she has been a gatekeeper of sorts with President Trump, particularly when it comes to news media efforts to talk to the president. She's been a really critical figure. You know, actually, Jim, your caller from Spencer, Iowa, raises a question for me, and that is whether General Kelly's military background makes him unsuited for this job. And I'm trying to think of the presidents I've covered. I've never covered a chief of staff, I don't believe, who came from a military background. Some of them came from Congress. Some of them came from the cabinet. And
there
I
was Al Haig, of course. Well, Al Haig
Nixon
was
era, yeah.
Nixon's final chief of staff, right. And Jerry Ford's first, and not terribly effective.
Right. So that's a great example because there's another chief of staff who struggled with some aspects of the job. And, you know, Eisenhower himself, someone talked about Eisenhower, I forget who it was, said that Eisenhower was going to have a tough time as president because the military and its honor of the command structure and all that was not how the White House worked, and that he'll demand something be done as president that would have happened when he was a commanding general, but it just won't happen in the complicated system of checks and balances and politics that is involved in the White House. And I wonder if that has, in fact, proved to be true with General Kelly. Mm.
You know, it was Harry Truman who said of Eisenhower, "Poor Ike. he's going to issue commands, and nothing will happen."
Yeah, that's what
it's
I was
nothing
thinking.
Like.
Yeah.
It's nothing like the military.
Yeah.
Let's get Carol in here from Port Richey, Florida. Hi, Carol. You're on the air. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. I just wanted to weigh in a little bit on John Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a lot of his supporters saying, you know, he's a military war veteran. He needs to be respected. I haven't heard anybody actually disrespect him for his military service, but I think he's just another example of a very flawed administration, and I think he needs to be gone, and actually it would do us all good to if the whole administration could be gone.
All right, Carol, thank you very much. Here's Mark in Baltimore, Maryland. Mark, you're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Just a really simple point. I think that John Kelly's a fine person, an honorable person. I think his biggest mistake was taking on this position. The person he's supposed to perhaps keep in line and say when he is moving away from his agenda, what this man that he's trying to do that with has no principles, just broadly and generally. And when you're trying to guide someone to stay within such principles and policies, you know, it's like impossible. And he's got himself, his worst decision he ever made was to take on this position. And he's put himself in line to become known as someone who's not quite as honorable as we thought he would. And listen, as for he's a person also who would have to be fired. He isn't a person who's he'll believe his stepping down from a position is bringing dishonor to this president, to himself. So he's in a very, very difficult situation.
Mark, thank you very much. Chris Whipple, do you want to jump in here? I mean, this is a highly decorated 4-star general, honorably served his country clearly. Is he the right person for this job? Is anyone the right person for this job?
Well, nobody questions General Kelly's record in the Marine Corps or his patriotism or his ability as a leader, I mean, at all. This is a very, very difficult skill set, and you've got a president who is intellectually, temperamentally, and in other ways, unfit for the office. That is you know, mission impossible for almost anybody. And there aren't very many James A. Bakers or Leon Panettas around. You know, those guys were people who were very comfortable in their own skin, who were grounded, who had political experience on Capitol Hill. They had White House experience. They were comfortable walking into the Oval Office, closing the door and telling the president, you cannot go down this road for the following reasons. Trust me, it's not going to work. It's a very difficult job, made all the more difficult by this unique president.
Gabe Sherman, I'll ask you the same question. Is General Kelly the right person for this job, even with his tremendous background, his pedigree? Is anyone the right person for this job?
You know, I think, unfortunately, one of the problems with Donald Trump is no matter what record you bring to the job prior to becoming a member of the administration, you invariably will end up worse off. I mean, we've seen this time and again. And I think just an example of, you know, one of Kelly's blind spots, you know, this is a man that has commanded men into battle. And yet when the allegations about Rob Porter surfaced, Hope Hicks, the White House communications director, was dating Rob Porter at the time. And she was involved in drafting the statement in which Kelly was quoted saying that Porter was a man of, quote, true integrity. And if you just stop for a second and you say that the person who is writing the White House press release defending this man against domestic violence allegations is also romantically involved with him, that is such a clear conflict of interest. And John Kelly did not – that's a perfect example where he should have – he's come forward and say, no, this is not – you have to recuse yourself. You are not writing the statement, and we are going to get to the bottom of these allegations. And that did not happen.
Let's hear John Kelly's voice again. Here he is last month telling Fox News that being White House chief of staff is both the toughest and the most important job he's ever had, and his main motivation is service to his country.
I am in this for the long haul. It is the most important thing I've ever done in my life, because if the administration fails, if the president of the United States – is uninformed one time and makes the wrong decision, that's on me.
Susan Page, jump back in here. How do you see that?
You know, I think it is fair to criticize General Kelly, but I think we should also recognize that he has been more successful as a chief of staff than his predecessor, Reince Priebus. He commands a stronger position in terms of in the president's eyes. He's more able to weigh in. He's imposed some greater discipline in terms of the paper flow to the president and in terms of the stream of people going in and out of the Oval Office. So it's not as though he has been a catastrophic failure. He's been put in a difficult job, and there are aspects of it that he is not doing well, and I think that that the Rob Porter situation has put a spotlight on some of the limitations of his service there as chief of staff. But, I think that Chris was talking about worst chiefs of staff in history and the competition there. And there is some competition from Don Regan and I think also from Reince Priebus about who has done the worst job. There are things that General Kelly has done well.
Well, but let me also jump in there because in fairness to Reince Priebus, Priebus was never empowered to do the job. And Kelly, in contrast, I think was empowered by Donald Trump. And so in a way, his failure is all the more glaring. So Priebus, I think, never had a chance because, again, there were at least three chiefs of staff, if not more. You had Stephen Bannon. You had Jared Kushner with no one empowered. So it was impossible for Priebus from the get-go, I think.
Yes, I agree with that. Reince Priebus had an impossible situation. And I think that the fact that President Trump clearly has so much respect for military generals has been a huge help to General Kelly in terms of his ability to do the job. But it hasn't made up for limitations in terms of his political instincts and his history in just understanding how Congress works, I think, that are also pretty crucial to succeeding.
Chris Whipple, what happens historically when a chief of staff loses credibility with the president?
Well, historically, that's the end. Historically, you really cannot – the moment, as Erskine Bowles, Bill Clinton's second chief of staff, third chief of staff put it to me, the moment that anybody senses that you're not speaking for the president, people can smell it, they can sense it, they can feel it, and you become nothing more than a glorified scheduler. You have to be perceived as speaking for the president. But of course, you know, Kelly's got another problem, which is truth was the first casualty of this administration and credibility was the second. And Kelly lost his credibility completely when he walked up to the podium in the White House press briefing room and attacked Frederica Wilson, the congresswoman, with a made-up story. So Kelly's really operating with so many liabilities that it's hard to see him being successful. But it's also not at all clear that Trump is ready to let him go.
Gabe Sherman, a lot of Republicans want to stay focused on their agenda at this point, a big infrastructure plan revealed today. How does the White House move forward from this?
Well, I think they will move forward only if and only when we get a full accounting of the, you know, the classic Washington question of who knew what when. You know, we know that Don McGahn, the White House counsel, was briefed on Porter's lack of a security clearance. John Kelly was. John Kelly has apparently told people that he wanted Porter out within, quote, 40 minutes of the second Daily Mail article coming forward. That does not comport with the reporting that I and others have done. So I think they can only move on when we know how this decision chain was made and what lessons the White House and West Wing can learn going forward.
Susan Page, do you think John Kelly will stay or will he go?
I think it depends on what President Trump decides, but I do not think this is – I think that the time will come when he goes because this is a job that just eats you alive.
Chris Whipple, you get the last word.
No question about it. There's a reason why the average tenure of a White House chief of staff is something like 18 months. It is grueling. It is unforgiving. You get all of the blame and none of the credit.
Well, panel, thanks very much for an interesting hour. Chris Whipple, author of the best-selling book, The Gatekeepers. Appreciate your time, Chris. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gabe Sherman, special correspondent for Vanity Fair. Great to have you with us, Gabe. Thanks.
Thank you.
And Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Always a pleasure, Susan. Thanks.
Hey, thank you, Jane.
Thank you. Coming up tomorrow, listeners, we'll look at the president's new infrastructure plan. Until then, I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.